Across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world, on the internet, by webcast, and by podcast, my name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Thanks a lot for returning to the show, for your emails, which have been tumbling into my inbox. All the response to recent shows, thank you very much for it, and the many emails that I've had from every corner of the planet. Thank you for those. I'm going to get into some shout-outs on another edition, because we've got a lot to do this time, but just to say, a lot of response to Simran Singh, the last guest, and some people saying thank you very much for putting Simran Singh on here, and as I knew would happen, some people saying this woman is just simply deluded. But it was a show, by and large, you enjoyed and found interesting, even if you thought that what she was saying was complete bilge. I have to stand in the middle and remain impartial, but I will say, as I said right the way through that show, I think whatever you believe about her, she is a brilliant deliverer of information. And from that perspective, then she wins, because that is a very, very key skill. Whether you think the message is rubbish or not has got to stay with you. Thank you very much to Adam Cornwell, my webmaster at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool, who created the website for you, www.theunexplained.tv, www.theunexplained.tv. That is the place that you can go, and you can click on a link and send me a message about the show, feedback about it, whatever, or indeed you can follow another link on the same site and make a donation to the show. And as I have been saying a lot lately, your donations are utterly vital for keeping this work going. At the moment, we don't charge a subscription like a lot of other shows do. We're trying to avoid as much commercial penetration of the show as possible, but inevitably we have to look at that as this show expands. But your donations are the lifeblood of what we do. I don't have bottomless pits of money by any means, but I know I've gone on about that before, so I won't say it again. This time round, we have a show that you suggested. I've had a few emails about this person, so I've tracked him down. He doesn't do a huge amount of interviews. His name is Simon Parks, and he is a local politician, a representative, a councillor, as we call them here, at Whitby in the north of England, which is a very nice town. This man, though, is very unusual for a local politician. He says that throughout his life, he's had alien contact. He is a contactee, abductee, whatever you want to call it. And his story, the way that it's put, certainly in what I've read about it, is quite unlike any other story of this kind, which is why I thought he'd be a good guest. So, via various means, including contacting his local council that he is a part of, I've been able to track him down, and by phone, in just a moment, we will connect with the North of England and talk to Simon Parks. Thank you very much for all of the support that you've given me. Please keep it coming. I sense, in fact, I know, because I look at the numbers now, we're reaching critical mass here with The Unexplained. It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and I'm grateful for that. Let's see where we can take this. Right, let's cross now to the north of England, about 250, 270 miles north of where I'm sitting right now in London, and talk to Simon Parks. Simon, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks very much indeed for inviting me, Howard. It's great to talk to you and to have a chat with your audience.
Well, your story is a story that I know my audience is going to be very interested in. It is a story that is ranging from, well, the descriptions you could use are bizarre at one end, and intriguing at the other end, perhaps any mix of the two. It is something that to some people will sound implausible, and to others, some of my American listeners, I would guess, would think this kind of thing goes on much more than is divulged to the public through the popular press.
Well, I don't think it's just the American audience. I think the last 5 years have seen people begin to question their government, not accept the stories they've been given, and I think people are far more open than they were previously.
Can we be clear, because I've read a lot about you on the internet, a lot of local newspaper articles, some stuff on various websites. The accounts vary somewhat between them, but is the basic story that you say that you've been in contact with aliens for almost all of your life?
Yeah, many people will do their websites, and if they don't take the trouble to speak to me, then of course they are not getting first-hand information. So, you know, you will find inaccuracies. But yes, that's exactly what I've been saying.
Okay, well, let me run this past you then. One of the newspaper articles, one of the more reputable newspapers, quoted you as saying that you'd first had contact with aliens, and that contact is, not to put too fine a point on it, and has been through your life, intimate.
That wasn't the first one. The very first contact, I think the American audience will know the term mantis, although in England we refer to it as mantid, and the Australians call it a manta. So the very first contact I would have had would be with a mantis. The intimate contact that the so-called reputable newspaper is bringing forward wouldn't have occurred until around about the mid-1970s.
When you'd have been how old?
I would have been probably around about 15, 16, something like that.
Okay. Well, tell me about that first contact then with the mantis.
The very, very first contact I will remember as being a very young child in, I don't know what the Americans would call it, but we would call it a cot. I think they might call it a crib. And I can remember the wooden bars and looking through. I was so little I couldn't actually lift my head up, but I could move my head from side to side. And all I can remember are these two very strange legs, and then looking upwards, and then two hands reaching in, and just thinking to myself, those don't look like my mother's hands. I'm being lifted up, and then held so that I was looking straight into the creature's face. No fear. I wasn't at all scared. I think at that age, you don't know the difference, do you? And all I can remember, having looked into this creature's eyes, was a sensation of falling. If you can imagine you were standing perhaps on the Grand Canyon and you were to take a step backwards and fall backwards, that's how it felt, this long, long sort of falling process. And that's all I can remember. And that was the very, very first visit from this creature. And ever since then, I've had these visits. I've never been harmed by them. Therefore, I have no fear of them. And it's very much a part of my life.
At 5 years of age, I can remember having a lot of nightmares, and some of them still haunt me to this day. They were very, very vivid. I had one after an edition of Doctor Who over here, science fiction program that, you know, for a little kid was pretty scary, but they were very real to me. Are you sure you were not having some kind of nightmare?
Well, all my memories don't happen as a dream. My memories are there during the day. It's in real time. When I'm visited, I'm not necessarily visited on my own. Other people are present. When a Channel 4 British television documentary was done of me last year, and they asked, oh, have you got anybody else who'll back it up? I gave them a list of names. What a surprise, they didn't even bother to go and check with anybody else, because their brief was to try and make a fool out of me.
But I'm sure they would say differently, but it is interesting, if you gave them a whole sheaf of names, why they didn't follow up on those names.
Well,
what sort
done.
Of people were they?
They were people who were present with me when I'd been visited at different times. Some of them worked for the Rothschilds. Some were just what I would call ordinary people, people who had ordinary jobs.
This is quite unique then from my experience of talking to people who tell me they've been abducted. You are saying that at the times, or some of the times when you've actually had contact with aliens, there have been other people there.
Yes.
And they've seen what you've seen.
Yes. The thing is that most accounts talk about being abduction at night time when the person's taken from the bed. And that actually is true, because the aliens do not want to be detected. They have a very short period of window time where they can come and do the work with the person before they're intercepted, either by Earth governments or by other alien races. Because a contactee or an abductee isn't just of interest to one person. They'll be of interest to the shadow government, they'll be of interest to different alien races. But in my case, they've often come during the daytime, and they've often come when people have been here, and it seems to make no difference to them. In most cases, the people who have been with me are in absolute states afterwards. One particular woman who now works for one of the Rothschild family, she was just an absolute drenched in sweat. But you see, as a young child, I got used to these creatures. And I suppose if you were to take a six-month-old baby from JFK Airport and fly them to Heathrow in London, and you did it every month, by the time that child was 2 or 3 years old, they could go anywhere in the world because they were conditioned to it. They became used to it. And in the same way, I became used to them. And if you take an adult who'd had no experience today and put an alien in front of them, they probably go to pieces. So that's the difference. It's just about being used to them.
So from their point of view, it was probably important to get you young, because as a small child, you would be less traumatized by the experience. And as your life went on, you would then begin to regard it, as you're telling me, as the norm.
I, I think you're absolutely spot on, Howard. I think that if you look at other people's accounts, in many cases they're interacted with as children. Dr. Carla Turner, God bless her, unfortunately she's dead now, she had it about right, and she did a lot of research on the mantis. And they often appeared to children and pretended to try and pretend to pass themselves off as members of that child's family. So she has accounts in her book, which I think was Into the Fringe. She talks about how they would say they were the grandmother or the auntie. Now, in this case, the mantis said that it was my mother. So there's a history here of people reporting that these creatures attempt to inveigle their way into your life by saying, I'm a member of your family. Now, when you're 2, 3, 4 years old, many children, of course, reject them, but some children accept them as members of the family, and I certainly accepted this creature as a member of my family.
Why do you think they were interested in you and not some other child?
Well, they are interested in other children. They're not just interested in me. If the question is, you know, what is it about you? It's bloodlines, Howard. I'm Jewish extraction. My father came from what we would call the Mesopotamia region. He could trace family lines right back to Sumerian times. It's all about your bloodlines, your genetics. And, you know, my grandfather had alien contact, and so it goes on. They follow you through your family lines.
You say your grandfather had alien contact.
Yes.
Presumably, although in journalism you must never presume, presumably you only found out about that after you told him what had happened to you? Or did he volunteer that to you beforehand?
No, he volunteered. My grandfather worked for what we local people in Britain would call MI6. It's actually not called MI6, it's called the SIS, the Secret Intelligence Services. And my mother worked for MI5, which again, we don't use that word, we call the BSS, the British Security Service. My grandfather worked really closely with the CIA, and in the latter part of his life with the NSA, the National Security Agency.
Is that documented? Could we go and find out about that?
No, but what is documented, they attempted to destroy all the British government attempted to destroy all the records, but what I have actually got, I managed to obtain a document which shows just before the Second World War broke out, because my grandfather was considered such an incredibly important asset, the British government got him on a ship and sent him to India so that he wouldn't be involved in the war. And I've actually got the manifest, the passenger log from the ship, and it actually shows him as a British diplomat. He actually shows him as a British consul. So we have got evidence that he was a British diplomat. I've got evidence of him obtaining the OBE, the MBE. He was given the CBE, Commander of the British Empire. He was offered a knighthood and turned it down. He was a member of what we would call the Illuminati. So I've come through from a very much an Illuminati family.
That's a pretty big thing to say. How do you know that he was a member of, if it exists, the Illuminati?
Well, it does exist. Although when you read on the internet, so much is written by people who have so little information that very much of it is wrong. Because he was one of the 12 men who actually voted on whether the famous king who was having an affair with Wallace Simpson should stay or go. If you read the official journals, basically the king was told by the prime minister and the head of the church that he couldn't remain as king and have a relationship with Wallace. He couldn't marry her. And so he was got rid of. And that's not what my grandfather told me. My grandfather told me that Wallace Simpson was having an affair with a guy at the German embassy, which was based in Britain, and his name was von Ribbentrop. And von Ribbentrop was obtaining documents which Wallace Simpson was getting from the king and passing them straight to the Abwehr, or the German intelligence.
This, of course, just at the beginning of the Nazi Party's rise and the roller coaster ride to World War II.
Correct. And when it was actually the special branch, according to my grandfather, who rumbled this. No secret service, just the special branch who rumbled it, because they were tasked with following the king and protecting him, and they were noticing what was going on. So the prime minister at the time didn't feel strong enough to face up the king, and so he was approached by somebody in government who said, well, we would call it the Illuminati now. I don't know what they would have called it back in those days. But it was actually told, form a jury, 12 good men and true, and they will decide you know, what should happen? My grandfather was one of the 12, and I asked my grandfather, well, what did you vote? And he said, well, I voted the king had to go. And I then said to my grandfather, well, what was the vote? And he said, well, only 3 people voted that the king should stay. So my grandfather, who was totally unelected, obviously a British diplomat, had the say on another unelected person, i.e. the king, decided whether that person could remain as King of England. Well, you are a member of the Illuminati if you take part in a vote that decides who is the King of England. So I came up through a very, very interesting family.
You did. That is a truly, and I've let you tell it, a truly amazing story. What was his name?
James Owen Marsland.
Well, I must do some research about him.
James Owen Marsland.
And why? A lot of people had prominent positions in society, one way and another. There were many connected people, there still are.
Yeah.
Why were the aliens interested in him?
Well, it'll be bloodlines.
Because of the
exactly
same thing, the bloodlines.
The bloodlines. But why the secret intelligence services were interested in around, I can't remember exactly that, look in my books, but in around about 1930, he was a manager of a cotton mill in India, or assistant manager, and there was a communist-inspired revolution. And he got all the Europeans into his manager's house, and the house was completely surrounded by these very angry people. Now, I don't know why my grandfather had a gun, but he always carried a gun. And he opened the door, fired 3 shots into the air, which dispersed the crowd, threw the gun to his second-in-command, and he said, if the crowd get in, shoot the women so they can't be raped. And then disappeared, fought his way through this crowd and disappeared. And they piled up, apparently, wardrobes or closets, as you'd say in America, anything against the windows and the doors. And just as the sort of the final closet was being kicked in, so apparently my grandfather appeared over the top of the sand dunes on a motorbike, followed by 3 lorry loads of French Foreign Legion, because the French had quite a big part in India.
My God, this man sounds like a mix of Winston Churchill and Lawrence of Arabia.
Well, what happened was, when he got through and saved them, then the British Intelligence Service offered him the OBE, or I can't remember exactly, the MBE at that time, and that's why he came to their prominence, and then they brought him into the Intelligence Service, and then he became a Freemason.
And you're promising me that much of this is documented, so we can verify this?
I've actually got, you can go on and find him receiving his medals. That's actually documented, and I've got that. So we've got the documentation showing him being presented with the OBE and the MBE. We've got documentation that shows him as being a British diplomat. But at the end of his career, which is 1960, when he no longer worked for the British government, and 1965, when he no longer worked for the secret intelligence services, he was told, you're not going to get a pension because we do not want to tie you to the British government. So he received no pension. But what they did was they bought him a great deal of stocks and shares and bonds, and then he lived off that for the rest of his life, and he lived for a good 30, 40 years.
So are you implying, because this man had, as you say, contact with aliens, are you implying that one of the reasons they treated him so specially is that they knew this too?
One of the reasons they treated him that way was because they wanted to draw him into the fold. It depends what your relationship is with aliens. I don't use the word extraterrestrials because many of them aren't extraterrestrials. They're from another dimension. But one of the reasons they would draw you in would be because they'd want to keep a handle on you. But that rather depends upon which alien group you are associating with, and also depends on what your relationship is with them. In his case, they were as much interested in him as the man. He has the record, I think, of the youngest sergeant major in the British Army. He was 17 in the First World War and was made a company sergeant major, which is incredible. So I think he was an incredibly dynamic individual. He spoke several languages, so they could see the benefit of having somebody like that go around the world. That's what he did, and he met leaders. He met Stalin, he met JFK. So he would sit with these people and he would discuss. He wasn't a spy in the James Bond side. He was the armchair man. He would sit in the armchair and then he would make things happen. And he was just an incredible character, and that was my grandfather.
I can only say wow. So when you went to him, at 5 years of age, which presumably you did, and you said, "Granddad, I've been visited."
Not at five. No. It would have been much older. I would have been. He didn't consider me a man until I was 21.
Really? So you didn't have a conversation about this with him until, as you say,
later.
A lot later.
Yes.
And when you did, how did that go?
He told me about his visit. The British government sent him to talk to Joseph Stalin. And that was the first thing he said. He said that after the Roswell incident, the Americans were not being forthcoming with the British. They weren't giving them any information. The British knew that the KGB had probably infiltrated the CIA. So my grandfather was sent to talk to Stalin probably about 49, something, 1949.
On whose behalf?
British, not anybody else's, British behalf.
And to what end would that have been?
Well, to actually ask, what could Stalin tell the British about the American exotic material? Grandfather would always refer to it as exotic material, not alien spacecraft.
And what did he find out from Joe Stalin?
Absolutely nothing. He actually showed me a hand mannerism. I can't do it because we're not on video, but he said that whenever Stalin was asked something and Stalin didn't want to speak, Stalin would hold both his hands up, and he showed me how Stalin would hold his hands up. And he said that Stalin basically said, "Give me 10 years and I will have infiltrated the CIA completely," which proved to be true. But grandfather said that Stalin actually gave him, and I've seen it, a beautiful, beautiful bracelet made of minerals, which I think is called Alexandrite, named after the old city of Alexandria. And Stalin said to my grandfather, "This is the nearest to alien material we have." And then he showed my grandfather in daylight. The mineral is like a blue, I think. And then when you go under neon light, artificial light, the mineral seems to turn color to green. And he gave it to my grandfather and said, "You can have that." And he said to my grandfather, "You give it to your mistress." Now, my grandfather, very traditional man, got quite upfront and said, "No, I don't have a mistress. I'm married." And he said, "Well, okay." And apparently this belonged to the last Tsarina.
Wow.
So he had that, and it was a beautiful bracelet.
And did Stalin give your grandfather any indication? What a pity we can't talk to your grandfather, but obviously we can't. Yes.
I don't know whether he would talk anyway, because he was incredibly loyal to this country.
And very, very old school by the sounds of it. But I just wonder whether Joe Stalin gave him any indication as to what the Russians were doing, what the Soviets were doing at that time, to try and get a piece of that action, which clearly the Americans, from this account, had.
No, well, I think that's what he meant when he said to my grandfather, "Give me 10 years and I will have infiltrated the CIA completely."
So that was his way of doing it, I see.
I think what he said was, "We haven't got there yet, but we certainly will find out whatever they know, we'll know, but it'll take us time."
Okay, we got a little sidetracked, but very, very interestingly. When you broached the subject of your alien contact with your grandfather...
Yes.
And he then regarded you as a man, you would have been, late teens, early 20s, whatever?
Yes, that's correct.
How receptive to the idea that you were being approached to was he?
It obviously struck him as what he expected. I'd always been treated preferentially over his own son's children. He had two children, obviously, the woman that became my mother, and a son, and that boy had two children, but the children and his own son were jealous of me because of the relationship I had with my grandfather. What my grandfather would say every time, I used to go visit him once a month. He lived in a place called Worthing, which was 12 miles away from where we lived in Brighton, about 12 miles. And every visit, once a month, when I'd go and visit him, he would say the same thing every time, which was, there are more stars in the sky than there are grains of sand on every beach and every desert. Therefore, there is always life. So he would never, ever come out and openly talk about the alien agenda or the alien items, but he would... He would be interested in what I had to say. He would nod his head, but he was very, very reticent on what he would come out with.
And what sorts of things did you tell him? How much of it did you tell him?
Not a huge amount, because he would get irritated and somewhat distressed, because it was clearly having resonance with him. But I would describe them to him. I would describe the craft. I describe what they look like. Some of them he'd never seen before, others he had seen before. But that would probably only be a 5 or 6 minute conversation, and then he would want to change the subject because he was finding it too uncomfortable.
All right, well, if you couldn't discuss it with him, maybe you can discuss it with us. Lead me through that period from 5 years of age to when you talked to him. What happened to you? You met this mantis creature first, and yeah, then the experiences progressed, didn't they?
Yeah, I think the ones that I can most clearly remember would be, again, as a young child, and these are referred to as sort of the greys. But interestingly enough, the greys, I mean, I draw everything down, Howard, that I can remember. So I have as like a little drawing book. And the greys that I'm drawing don't look like the greys that Hollywood shows. The creatures that I saw were about a meter tall, 3 foot, but didn't have the great big wraparound eyes. They had much smaller eyes with big lids, and the back of the heads bulged out. They were grey-skinned, have a very strange way of walking, don't communicate with the slit mouth, or always communicate mentally. And I can remember sitting on the floor, looking up, and what appeared to be all my toys floating in the air in a great, like a ball. So there was the teddy bear, the soldiers, the building blocks, all appeared to be slowly turning, like a large chandelier, if you will. And then I stared at it, and then it changed, and they were no longer toys. They were like shards of glass, each one brightly coloured. So if you can imagine a big shop window, Madison Square Garden, and you were to, I don't suggest you do this, you were to put a brick through the window and smash it into thousands of pieces of glass, and then paint each one individually a bright colour, and then somehow holographically stick that up so it formed a circle, like a ball. And that was floating, and one of the little grey creatures said to me, "Look, look, watch, understand." So it was obviously some form of information. I haven't a clue what it was about. So that's something very, very clearly in my mind.
But if they were trying to give you information,
yep,
do you not think, I mean, that is a marvellous story, but why were they not clearer?
Well, I think, I mean, I'm no expert on this, but I think if you're trying to download complex amounts of information to a young child, it's probably impossible to sit there and use a language that an adult would use, because half of the vocabulary the child wouldn't understand. But if you can use that or produce it in such a way that it's, I don't know, sits in the mind for a while and then activates at a later date, that to me would make much more sense.
Now, you are, from what I've read in these newspaper articles that I've been reading about you, in your 50s now.
You're correct.
Has this information shown signs of activating yet?
Well, I don't know what the information is. That's the sad part of it.
That must be a huge problem for you. How does that leave you feeling? If you were part of something, if you experience something that you sense is towards an end, but you don't know what the end is, doesn't that leave you messed up in some way?
No, I didn't say that, Howard.
Right.
I was saying that particular one-off session, I haven't a
Got
clue
it.
What that was
mm-hmm.
about. Excuse me, coughing. I don't know what that was about. There are many, many experiences I have where I would think, well, what was that about? Or I've only partially understood that. I mean, that's, I think, is part of the course. And anybody who is genuinely contacted by these creatures, if anybody can ever put their hand on their heart and say, I know exactly what that was about, I think I'd be very suspicious of them. We are dealing with creatures that are thousands of years ahead of us technologically.
And what did they tell you about themselves?
I got a history of the mantis. I got a history of who they are, what their job is, how they interact with other alien species, how they interact with different Earth governments. Although they only consider the American government the Earth government, they've said to me that the American government speaks for all of the Earth. So as far as they're concerned, that's the only government that they take any notice of.
And where exactly had they come from, and how had they travelled here?
Howard, don't know where they come from. I have no idea. They have shown me like a star chart and a grouping of planets, but I haven't a clue where they are or what their name is.
So after years of these experiences, did it leave you feeling somewhere in your head, what the hell is this all about?
No, I understand what it's about. What it left me thinking is the bigger agenda, the wider game. And the main thing that strikes me is that, you know, why have I had reasonably okay experiences where other people have been hurt, operated on to an extent that they are traumatized. It's very difficult for me because if I go to conventions, which I do, I have to be quite circumspect because my story is quite different from many, many others. And it's very difficult if somebody's had a lifetime of abduction and it's very painful for them. They don't really want to be hearing me saying how jolly and friendly they are.
Because your contact, from what you've told me so far, sounds very benign.
Yes, and I know that that's not just mind control, because at the end of each experience, I'm not sweating, I'm not in any pain, I have no concerns, and I remember exactly what's occurred. I'm very, very fortunate in that respect, whereas people who've been with me when they visited have seen these creatures have just gone completely to pieces.
You say that they are interested in not only your grandfather's but your bloodline, and that's the key draw for them to you.
Yeah.
Are they taking samples of your blood, your DNA?
Oh, they'll have that. They would have done that yonks ago, years ago they would have done that.
So if they got that, why did they keep coming back?
Because they need to interact with... one of the problems with Western civilizations is that we have lost, or we're losing our touch with the world. We're so into technology. So it's only someone who's deeply religious will understand the connection between a physical body and the soul that lives in that person. If you go to the Muslim countries through the Quran, they are taught very clearly that the body isn't important. It's a vessel, and it's the soul that lives inside that body. Well, they've said to me exactly the same thing, that what they're visiting isn't the physical body, but the soul that inhabits the body.
Did you never at any stage feel inclined to say to them, as I might if they were doing it to me, isn't it enough already? Isn't it time to leave this alone and go and find someone else?
Well, if they never hurt me, which they haven't, then it's not a negative experience.
But what do you think you're getting out of it, if anything?
I'm certainly getting information. I'm also certainly the country that I live in is being very, very careful with me. Last year I got a personal tour of one of the most top secret military installations in this country. It's called RAF Fylingdales. It's actually run by the Americans, but it's called an RAF base, and I got my daughter and I were given a 3-hour tour around the base, and was given a presentation at the end of it.
I think most people in the UK have heard of Fylingdales, but in America and other places, Fylingdales always used to be known in the news as the place where any potential nuclear weapon threat to the UK would be detected first. Isn't that right?
Well, it's actually referred to now. A whistleblower about 3 or 4 years ago started calling it a space radar base, and they've had to go with that now. So it's actually known as a space radar. It's the only one in the world that looks in 3 directions, and it puts up, maybe doesn't cover quite the whole of the Earth, but it goes out quite a long distance and looks over maybe 3/4 of the Earth into space. And it's actually the space radar that is based in Britain.
And you got an invitation. How did you get that?
A member of the security services approached a third party who then said that it would be nice if I and my daughter had a tour around this base and they could arrange it. And they did. And so we had a 3-hour tour around the base.
So you remain quite close to the security services, as was your grandfather, as we heard.
Correct.
Do they debrief you?
No, they're not allowed to do that. Their job is to keep a day watch. Watch, keep an eye. And if I'm getting a journalist who's wants to do a dirty job on me, then I'll usually get somebody just tip me off beforehand. There was somebody, I think, from the States who wanted to do a really nasty job, and I think he got a visit from the NSA, and I never heard from him again.
Really? Okay, and how much media exactly do you do?
Well, I prefer to do talks. I tour the country, and I talk at conferences. That seems to be a really good thing to do, to talk to people face-to-face, and they get the chance to come up to me and ask me questions and can interact, and that's quite good. Certainly I've done British television, done most of the BBC radio stations, foreign stations. You know, if somebody's sensible and it's a reasonable interview, I'll go for it.
A lot of people I've talked to on this show over the years, and I've talked to many, many people, from the grandfather of ufology, Stanton Friedman, to the people at CSETI and SETI. A lot of these people would say that the security services have wanted over the years to draw a veil over this stuff and not let it get out to the public. And yet, with the contact that you have with them and the fact that they are kind of involved in what is happening with you, they seem to be encouraging you to go out and tell the story. Why do you think that is?
I think that there's a war of words going on at the moment in many, many institutions throughout the Western world. I think one half of a group wants to keep the lid on it, and I think there's a growing group that say enough is enough, it's time to let the truth out. And I think that's the same with the Illuminati. I think it's the same with security services. I think it's the same with the military. I think that the human consciousness has reached a point now where people feel uncomfortable holding on to lies, and they want to make the truth come out. Certainly I think that it's very difficult. My own mother, my biological mother, told me that the government, that will be the American government, keeps two lists. A list of everybody who has been contacted by aliens, although she told me back in the 1970s that list was incomplete and was never updated as it should have been. And there was another list where the government had abdicated responsibility for those individuals. So in other words, it had turned those individuals over to the aliens and they could do what they want. Now, if I have to pay my taxes like everybody else, and if I park badly, I'll get a parking ticket. But in other ways, when I do my talks, I give evidence for this, and it shows that I'm treated rather differently from most people. And that tends to back up what my mother was telling me back in about 1973, 74.
So there is something different and special about you.
Nothing special about me at all.
Well, you've already told me the bloodline is different.
Yeah, I don't think that's special. I mean, I'm just an ordinary person, and there's nothing special about me whatsoever, but I am of interest to them, and I am interested to them because of the genetic bloodlines, which I don't have any control over. I was born, I don't know. But, you know, it is that line that they follow back, as they do many people.
You talked about your mother, your biological mother, but...
Yes.
Some of this stuff that I've again been reading about you talks about an alien mother that you believe you have too.
Well, it is confusing, Howard, and I don't blame you for misunderstanding it. And on an hour's show, you know, it's very difficult to understand. Carla Turner described through her interviews with children how these children would declare that these creatures had said they were auntie or grandmother, attempted to pass themselves off as a member of the family, and it's women that you would normally associate to be protective of the children. So this creature declared itself to be my mother when I was very young. And I don't call it mother now, I refer to it as mum. So if I'm talking about my biological mother, I'll call her mother, because that's what she was. But when I'm referring to the alien, I'll just call it mum.
So do you have reason to believe that there is maybe alien DNA within you?
What's important is the soul. Your physical body isn't of any importance whatsoever. Well, it is, because we live in a 3D reality, and, you know, we have to drink coffee, so if we don't have a hand, we can't pick the cup up, can we? So a physical body is very, very important. But the physical body will die in 70, 80, 90, 100 years. And then my belief is that soul is recycled into another body, and so it goes on and on and on, and that's what the aliens are following. So your body... Your body must be adapted by alien technology to be able to maintain, if your soul has been interacted with, then your frequency will be slightly different. So I wouldn't be surprised if there had been some manipulation of the genetic material at some point. But remember this, that if you look alien, you cannot get by on this world. You cannot interact. You can't be treated normally. You can't go into a shop and buy things. So you have to look like the humans, because if you don't look like the humans, you won't actually be accepted by them. So when we talk about hybridization, which is possibly what you're coming on to,
yes,
if vitally important that any hybridized creature looks and accepts and acts and understands like a human. Otherwise, they won't get by.
So you believe on some level, even if it isn't a DNA level, there is a degree of hybridization about you?
I'm... what we say in England is the jury's out. Whenever I go and do my talks, and there are UFO researchers with 20, 25, 30 years experience, they'll come up and declare that of me. I don't know, that's just what they're saying. I remember one chap who was a very, very successful hypnotherapist in Ireland, and he made his money by working for American corporations to make better sales staff, so they employed him to do work on their top salesmen and women to make them even better. And he contacted me through another organization and determined he was going to fly from Ireland to come and meet me. And I not really bothered, really, but I said, well, why on earth do you want to meet me? And he said, because you're not human, and I want to meet you because you're not human.
Gee.
But that's often what I get. But as I say, that's other people's opinion of me. I've got, I look just like everybody else.
Do you have a family?
You mean children on the earth?
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
Children on the earth.
I did tell you that my daughter, came with me to the tour of the radar base.
Okay, yes, you did. And, all right, this brings me to this point then. Your family, your daughter, are they being visited?
Well, I don't have permission to discuss them. Mm-hmm. My daughter works for the British Army, and she has a reasonably sensitive job, so it's not my place to discuss that. But I have said that, family lines are followed. Mm. So my grandfather was followed.
So we can draw whatever inference we want from that.
I don't really want to discuss.
That's fine by me, Simon.
You.
It is. This brings us to a difficult part of the conversation, and I'm sure you know what I'm about to talk about. But some of the stuff that is written about you and that was on that documentary that you didn't enjoy by the sounds of it was about you. And, for delicate ears, how do we express this? Well, you having sex with aliens. Can you tell me what you can about that?
Well, I mean, I volunteered that because what I've been aware of for some time is that ufology, I'm going to use that word, hasn't moved forward very much since the 1960s. It's the same old stuff that's coming out. The flying saucer landed, the little grey creature came out, the person was frozen with fear, taken on board, probes were put into them, and then they were put back in their bed. And this is the same stuff that's coming out for the last 30, 40 years, and audiences seem to be just stuck in time with that. We need to go forward. We need to push out the boundaries and actually get people to say, well, let's see what else is happening. Most people will not come forward and do what I've done because they're scared of ridicule, they're scared of losing their job, whatever it might be. And when I go up and down the country and I do my talks, I wish to goodness that there was a camera with me, because a number of people that come up to me afterwards and say, well, you know what, this has happened to me before, but I couldn't tell anybody and I daren't tell anybody. And it's far more common than we would think. Yes, it sounds incredible to people who've never seen a flying saucer, who've never seen an alien. And I guess, if I'd never seen anything or had anything experienced to me, I'd find it very hard to believe. Aliens don't call it marriage. They have a term which works into English as bonding. So you can be, as a human on the earth, you can be bonded or paired with another creature.
And are you?
Yes.
Okay, and these creatures, what can you tell me about that?
These creatures are very compatible. A human on one planet is not dissimilar from a human on another planet. Mm.
So you have, what, you have an alien partner?
Well, yeah, the thing is, again, from human perspective, I remember talking to somebody on another radio show, couldn't quite get their head around it, because, again, you're looking at it purely, which, of course you will do, you're looking at it from a human perspective. You can use the word partner, I suppose, because that's as good a word as any, but for me, it's just something that happens. It's something that's happened for a long time. I've agreed to all this. I should just say, Howard, because it's a bit out of context, in 1971, I was probably about 11 and three quarters years old, I made an agreement with a Mantis who offered me a deal, and I accepted that deal. And the wording was, would you like to be like us, to have knowledge and understanding, to know the future and see the past, to have power and authority? And I just was so excited at all that, I just shouted out, yes! And then his hand came off my shoulder, took my hand and said, well then, come with me. And that was 1971.
And when you say come with me, were you taken to a spacecraft?
I was already on a craft. I was with five children in the local park. We'd been playing. And then we saw this craft. It was a teardrop-shaped craft with the round end at the front and the pointy end at the back. Teardrop-shaped craft come over us. I was literally taken off the earth. Interestingly enough, these five children that were with me, one of those children, female, married a British diplomat, and all of those children had very unusual things happen to them. But in my case, it's too long, we don't have the time, but it was, I was away for quite a long time. Saw some interesting things, saw what people call reptilians, saw what we call the shadow government. I saw very human people in white coats, scientists, and I remember one guy even had a big biro in the top of his pocket, and he was in charge of the scientists, and he was a very well-spoken English person, but all the other four scientists were American, and there was one female American, and she was telepathic, so she was the only one who could communicate with the aliens on a telepathic level, and then she would speak back to the scientists, you know, using her mouth.
So what we get from this is that all of this has been going on at a level way above our heads, involving our own governments, for, as a lot of us have suspected for a great deal of time, for quite a period.
We need the truth, Howard, because in the early days it was, we can't tell you because you'd be too scared. My biological mother used to say to me, well, you know, when Orson Welles did the War of the Worlds radio broadcast, that was done deliberately to see how the Americans would handle it. They handled it terribly. We can't ever tell the truth to the public.
That's a very, very interesting spin on that. I'd never thought of that before. That makes sense.
Well, that's right. My mother was very much, I mean, my mother had met Orson Welles. She was a close friend of Orson. She knew many, many people in the media industry.
And was Orson Welles a believer?
He was a believer in the sense that he'd seen enough people who had told him what they'd seen, and he respected those people. He hadn't seen it himself, but when other people told him, and because he respected and believed them, then he believed their stories.
We don't want to be graphic about this, but one of these things I read about you, and we do have to go here, albeit briefly, one of the newspaper pieces effectively said in the headline, this man says he has sex with an alien four times a year, and his wife was not entirely pleased when she found out. Talk to me about that.
I don't know where the four times in the year come from. I think that has been made up.
Well, so it's more than four times a year.
It could be less. Yes, I'm sure my wife wasn't very pleased. But then it's part of the life. You see, the thing is, when the media ran with it, they thought that, of course, the family only knew about it because they'd run with it. Well, the family's known about it for years and years, so it was no new thing to them.
And your wife, I don't want you to talk too much about your private life, but tell me what you can. Your wife has always known this about you, about your contacts, about the intimate relations with beings?
Not from the very beginning, but certainly for many, many years, yes.
And when you first made her aware, or when she first became aware of the full scale of it, what did she say?
I think like anybody else, she was rather taken aback by it, but she knew enough to realise that her government wasn't being truthful. She realised that there were many things in the world that she'd been taught in school and university, which, I'm not saying they were deliberately lied to her, but she'd found that that wasn't the case, and that it was very presumptuous to think that the only living creature in the whole of the universe would be humans on planet Earth. So I think after the initial, oh, that's a bit unusual, she just got on with it.
Okay, I want to move away from this, but I have to ask you this, because my listeners would expect me to, and I know that if Art Bell was doing this interview in America, he would certainly ask you the question, what we call sex and what they call sex, is it the same thing?
Can you be more specific? Can you be more graphic? I don't understand.
Well, the the procedure that we go through here, the procedure that we know here.
You mean sexual intercourse?
Yeah. Is it the same sort of stuff?
It depends which alien you're talking about. For those that are compatible with humans, absolutely it is. But there are other aliens that are not compatible.
And are you saying that you've sort of in that way known them all?
Well, it's not all of them. There's only
a lot of them. Some of them.
There's only one that I'm bonded with. Mm-hmm. One female was chosen for me apparently when I was very, very young. I remember actually being introduced to her, and you have to understand, or your audience, I would ask them to understand that a lot of these aliens live much longer than we do. So, for me to grow to maturity, to be till I was sexually active, was just a drop in the ocean to them. If a creature can live for 400 or 500 years, then watching somebody grow up 10, 15 years is of no consequence to them whatsoever. But I will answer the question very clearly. In human terms, we would call it sex. Well, a male will call it sex, a man will call it sex, a woman will call it love. Because here on Earth, men and women see the sexual act slightly differently. Aliens call it ritual. Bonding and ritual. To them, it's a very much a ritual thing that has to be done. They don't gain much pleasure from it at all. It's just something that needs to be done. So different beings have different takes on it.
So this whole thing, Star Trek, wasn't really too far wide of the mark. This whole Klingon thing, where, from what I remember watching Star Trek, that was a ritual. Same kind of thing.
Well, Gene Roddenberry, the creator of the original Star Trek, was actually in a domestic passenger air flight flying from one American city to another when he saw a spacecraft out the window, and it was that got him interested. He then started talking to experiencers, contactees, and through their recounting of what happened to them, he wove that into his stories. He also was fed ideas by the CIA, and he worked very closely with them. Just as Cameron, who made Avatar and Terminator, works very closely with the American intelligence services, and they share ideas. So Hollywood and the Secret Services work hand in glove, drip feeding the public with certain information. Yes, they're brilliant people, Cameron, and any creator of any science fiction or science fact show deserves a pat on the back.
Now, I got a contact from somebody saying you've got to talk to this guy who is a local town councillor at Whitby in the north of England, who also says that he's in regular contact with aliens and has had a lot of coverage for that. And here you are on the program. How can you be, and for people in America, other parts of the world, a councillor is basically a local politician, a local representative. How can you do this and talk about your alien experiences and go to conventions and conferences and various other things, and also be a political representative? How do those two things dovetail?
Well, I think that's a question that we should ask the Secret Services, and we should ask the British government, because this is what confounds negative people, is that why haven't I been removed from office? And that's the question. If what I'm saying is total nonsense, if I'm completely mad, why haven't I been removed from office?
Well, people have a right to vote for you, whether you say that you're the Aga Khan, whether you say that you've come from Mars, don't they?
I think that's the key, and that's why I'm really, really hopeful for humanity on the planet Earth, because I went public first, and then after I'd gone public, I then stood for election. So the people knew what they were getting.
And do you think that for some of them you may have been a protest vote, rather like the man in London called Screaming Lord Such used to be?
No, I think they voted for me because I'm a member of the Labour Party and because I can get their streetlights working, and if their pavements are broken, their sidewalks are damaged, I get them repaired. Mm. That I keep the local tax down that we charge our citizens. So they voted for me for that. They didn't vote for me because they see flying saucers. Mm. And as I said once on an election broadcast, you know, I'm not a banker. I've not robbed you of millions of pounds. I'm not a murderer. I've not murdered anybody. What I've done is I've seen aliens. And the great thing is that the electorate voted for me. And again, for people who are negative and who wish to try and paint me into a corner, it's very hard for them because the public have voted for me.
Well, if I was one of your political opponents and I was put on some kind of debate program prior to an election, I guess the first thing I would say is, how could you possibly vote for a man who says that he's in contact with aliens?
Yeah, but the public do, don't they? Because what they see is somebody who gets the job done. And, you know, when I'm doing my political work, I don't talk about aliens. I talk about the needs of the public.
You're a Labour politician. Have you any sense of what the national controlling part of the Labour Party feels about you talking like this?
Yes, they've said to me it's a private matter, we leave you alone.
Really?
Yeah, otherwise I wouldn't be here, would I? I'd have been removed from office. The only time I ever got a phone call from head office was I did a very, very well-watched television show, I think it's called The Today Show or Breakfast, I can't remember. I'm never good with it all. But there was a very, very big program with Philip Schofield and Willoughby. And
okay, they're two big TV hosts in the UK.
Yes, and I was asked to go on there, and I initially said no. So they said, well, we'll you know, organise a show for Carr and pay you for it. And
then, they make it very easy for you.
They ground me down. A very, very polite girl kept ringing me up and this, that, and this. Only I did. And it was quite good because the day before that, a very, very senior member of the government in Britain had criticised me. So I used that as a right of reply and criticised back. And then when I got home, I got a phone call from my head office saying, for heaven's sake, next time you're going to do that, just tell us beforehand so we can get the press boys ready. And that was it.
And what about the style of the programme? I didn't see that edition, but I know that that particular programme, because it's all about ratings and because, of course, it's very heavily regulated, at the end of the day, it has to be very, very sceptical because the Broadcasting Act requires you to be very, very sceptical if you're on television or radio domestically here. I presume you were given a very nice but very tough time.
I think you're showing your knowledge. I think you know more than you're saying, Howard. Mm. What actually happened was that they were going to make it as difficult for me as possible, and they received a phone call from somewhere incredibly high up, which said to them, "You don't treat this man this way." And as a result of that, I got a very, very decent, open interview. I will say this of Schofield: he's an incredibly intelligent man. And off camera, he said to me, "You know, he said, I'm very interested in what you have to say. I'd like to invite you back. I'm quite open to what you have to say," but he said, "I cannot say this while we're live." So I've got the greatest respect for him, an incredibly intelligent man. Yes, it was a very, decent interview, but then it was made that way.
And of course it was live, that gives you a hell of a lot more control.
Only negative people would seek to edit and cut an interview to put the person into a bad position.
But you consented to a documentary, didn't you? And you say that documentary that was seen all over the UK showed you in a bad light.
No, it didn't. Mm. No, it didn't.
What did it do?
It showed everybody else in a bad light. They showed exactly what I wanted them to show. Everything that I'd said was put in there, which is fine. I had no problem with that. What they did with the other people was trick them, entrapped them, made them do things that were then looked very bad.
Well, I'm sure they would say that they were just following the editorial process, and your take on it is your take on it.
I would say what they've told me. That's what they've said to me.
Well, of course, I don't have them on here to verify that, but
no,
I hear what you say. I hear what you say.
Yeah, I think that depends who controls a media organisation and what their how they want it to come out. I think that's the best way to describe it.
Very quickly, have the aliens that you're in contact with and your partner, has anybody, because they live so long, have they ever discussed with you what happens to you when you die?
Yeah, I'll just simply, my physical body will die, my soul will go up, it won't go back to source, it will be trapped, and the memory that I have of this lifetime will be eradicated or partially eradicated, and I will be returned into another body.
Are you looking forward to that?
Not really, because this is a bit of a treadmill on this planet, and I think it's time that most humans evolved, their consciousness rose, and they sort of said, well, we've had enough of all this. Because, to be honest, Howard, it's very much like a prison planet. That's why there are so many people on this planet who, you know, rob, steal, do all the horrible things. And it's about time that humanity sort of changed and started to search for the truth.
And inevitably, there are people, and you are clearly an intelligent and astute man, and clearly you're able to deal with it, but there will be people who will email me, and they've probably said it to you. You might even get letters and emails, I hope you don't, but will accuse you of being a complete lunatic.
My answer is, if I was, I would be removed from office, because in England there's a law that says if you are a lunatic, you cannot be a representative of the people.
But of course, you're clearly functioning very well as a politician from what you've told me, doing the job that you're supposed to do. You haven't committed any illegal acts. You're not guilty of gross moral turpitude or anything else. So how could they remove you from office?
Because they say I'm mad. So if they say I'm mad and I'm not removed from office, therefore something's wrong, isn't it?
But I could say the Prime Minister's mad. You know, that's just my opinion. It wouldn't disbar him from office.
But he doesn't claim to do this, that or the other, does he? Mm.
Okay. So you're confident that you will continue with a political career and also continue with the alien activities?
Well, I'm confident that I'll continue with the political career because that's all been agreed. The powers that be, the elite, don't have a lot of choice in the matter. The alien activities are really down to them. If they want to stop visiting me tomorrow, then they'll stop visiting me tomorrow. I don't have any say in that.
I'm not sure whereabouts in the electoral cycle you are in Whitby. Are you due for elections in May this year?
No, next year.
And you're confident you'll win?
Yes.
Well, you are every inch the politician then, Simon.
Well, the reason I'm confident is because when I walk out on the street, people come up and shake me by the hand. Mm-hmm. The people who matter, i.e. the local people, the people who rely on services, they want their refuse removed, their trash taken away, they want their roads kept clean. They're the people that matter, not the big people sitting up in their big expensive offices.
Understood. Well, I'm sure the Conservatives, Liberal Democrats, UKIP and all the rest of them will probably have a separate take on that, but that's a whole other thing. If people want to find out impartially more about you, do you have a website or a place where they can read about you?
I don't, because it would just be taken down by negative people all the time. I just say to people, if you want to learn the truth, please don't listen to the mainstream media. Listen to shows like yours, Howard. go onto the internet and join groups, go to talks, and try and question and ask your soul, what do you think is right? Ask yourself, trust yourself. That's what I say to people.
Fascinating information. Thank you for it. And I hope you think that I've been fair to you.
Howard, I wouldn't have expected anything other from you.
Well, I know you're going to let me know your reaction to that. Simon Parks, the councillor in the north of England who says he is also an alien contactee, puts a pretty convincing story forward, doesn't he? Your views very welcome. Go to the website www.theunexplained.tv, www.theunexplained.tv, and you can send me feedback there by following the link. And also, if you can, please make a donation to help this show continue to run. Future guests on the show will include Gerald Celente, a return visit from him, and another visit from Uri Geller. I'm hoping to talk to him in person this time about some very fascinating stuff, and a lot more things in the pipeline here at The Unexplained. Thank you very much to Adam Cornwell at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool. He designed the website and gets the show out to you. We couldn't do it without him. And thank you above all else to you for your support. Please keep that coming. My name is Howard Hughes. Until next we meet here on The Unexplained, stay safe, stay calm, and stay in touch. Take care. Bye-bye.